Will the members please register their presence by voting? Clerk, please take the quorum.
36 present, 4 absent.
Representative Miller?
Speaker, Representative Osi is excused from a call to the House today. I'll ask unanimous consent that other absent members be shown as excused on official state business.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Clerk, please indicate the presence of Representative Meekins in the chambers. Our chaplain today is Lieutenant Floyd Bacon of the Salvation Army. The House please rise for prayer.
O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth, who has set thy glory above the heavens. Out of the mouth of babes and suckling hast thou ordained strength because of thine enemies, that thou mightest still the enemy and the avenger. When I consider thy heavens and the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him? For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels, and hast crowned him with glory and honor. Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hands. Thou hast put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, yea, and the beasts of the field, the fowl of the air, and the fish of the sea, and whatsoever passeth through the paths of the sea. O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth. Truly, Father, thou art great and a powerful God. At this Easter time, we are mindful not only of your greatness, but of your love, which you have continually shown toward mankind. Help us, O God, to allow your love to enter into our daily lives to such an extent that we may truly be better men and women. This morning, our Father, we would also pray for those on the Senate side who are not working. We pray in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Representative Urien. Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Representative Greening.
Mr. Speaker, can we have that spread on the Senate Journal as well?
Will the clerk please certify us to the correctness of the Daily Journal?
As chief clerk, I certify us to the correctness of the journal for the 74th day in House Supplement Number 24.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent this body approve the journal as certified by the chief clerk for the 74th day and for House Supplement Number 24.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Brings us to introduction of guests. Are there guests for introduction to the chambers? Representative Buchholz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and Gallery B. Is a new friend of mine, the daughter of my assistant, Robin Spartz.
Are there further guests for introduction? If not, are there any messages from the governor?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate has adopted the following citation, and it is transmitted for consideration. Congratulating Seattle Skyhawks by all members of the Senate. The Senate has passed the following, and they are transmitted herewith for consideration. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 87 by the Rules Committee by request, annulling a regulation of the Department of Environmental Conservation relating to drinking water.
Referred to the Committee on Health, Education, and Social Services.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 401 by the Finance Committee, an act making supplemental appropriations to the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Community and Regional Affairs and providing for an effective date.
Referred to the Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Communications?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 783, a special appropriation to the Alaska State Council on the Arts, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Cooper, Duncan, Buchholz, Swanson, Meekins, Guy, Haugen, Rode, Freeman, and Greening. House Bill 783 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 870, a special appropriation to the new Capital Site Planning Commission, under consideration, and the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 870 and reports it back with individual recommendations. Report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman. Signing do pass, Cooper, Guy, and Greening. Signing do not pass, Freeman. Signing no recommendation, Haugen, Schaefer, Swanson, Buchholz, and Duncan. House Bill 870 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 884, Technical Amendments Relating to Oil and Gas Taxes, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 884 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Cooper, Duncan, Buchholz, Swanson, Meekins, Guy, and Greening. Signing no recommendation, Haugen, Rode, and Freeman. House Bill 884 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of House bills?
House Bill 907 with a transmittal letter by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act repealing the Land Registration Law, AS 3410, and providing for an effective date.
Referred to Resources and Judiciary?
House Bill 908 by the State Affairs Committee. An act making a special appropriation to the Office of the Governor, Office of Telecommunications, for statewide satellite television service and providing for an effective date.
Referred to the Select Committee on Telecommunications, State Affairs, and Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Brings us down to consideration of the calendar. Clerk, please read the first item on the calendar.
House Bill 589 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act establishing the Alaska National Guard Senior ROTC Scholarship Program and providing for an effective date. The Committee on HES has had House Bill 589 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, concurred in by Nakak, Cotton, Byrne, Chatterton, and Parr. Signing no recommendation, Osi and Phillips. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 589 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Cooper, Freeman, Rode, Guy, Schaefer, Swanson, and Greening. Buchholz says forward march. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that House Bill 589 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Would the clerk please read House Bill 589 in third reading?
House Bill 589 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act establishing the Alaska National Guard Senior ROTC Scholarship Program and providing for an effective date.
House Bill 589 is before you in third reading. Is there any discussion? Ready for the question? The question is, shall House Bill 589 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Yeas, no nays, 3 excused.
So, House Bill 589 has passed the House. The bill does carry an effective date clause. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent to the roll call on House Bill 589 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Will the clerk please read the next item on the calendar?
House Bill 756 by Duncan, an act relating to the identification of Alaska arts and handicrafts. The Committee on Commerce has had House Bill 756 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass with attached amendment. Report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, concurred in by Bradley, Carpenter, Brown, and McKinnon. I have one amendment on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative McKinnon.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent to withdraw the amendment.
The amendment has not been moved, so unless there's a motion to adopt it, the amendment to be considered withdrawn. Ms. Clerk, have further amendments to the bill?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller?
Mr. Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that House Bill 756 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. The clerk, please read House Bill 756 in third reading.
House Bill 756 by Duncan. An act relating to the identification of Alaska arts and handicrafts.
Representative Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, maybe I could just very briefly explain what House Bill 756 is attempting to do. I think we're all familiar with the Silver Hand Program, a program that's been in existence in the state for several years, in an attempt to identify Native arts and handicrafts. I think we're also probably familiar with the fact that last year we enacted legislation to try to strengthen the program or improve it. However, we did just the opposite. We caused a lot of confusion. The program was not able to function last year. If I could just very briefly perhaps read to you what we did. We expanded the program. Instead of having just a silver hand, one silver hand for all Native arts and handicrafts, we set up a program whereby we would have identification seals with a distinctive design bearing the words "an authentic resident Alaskan craft made in Alaska," which may not include the silver hand, but we didn't specify what symbol it should be. And then for the silver hand, we designed three different tags, one that would say "an authentic Alaskan Indian craft made in Alaska," one "an authentic Alaskan Eskimo craft," and third "an authentic Alaskan Aleut craft." And in addition to that, in order so that we could simplify the program a little bit more and so that people wouldn't be confused as to where the object came from, we said that the seal shall have a letter symbol and color change to designate the area in the state in which the article was produced, and a number to designate the agent who was selling it. Well, instead of simplifying it, that made the program unworkable, because what we came up with was about 24 different tags, and it didn't work, and it was never administered. This bill, House Bill 756, is designed to go back, simplify the law, and make it one that will work, and I think it's an act that we do need. What we've got now under 756, we'd still have the silver hand. The silver hand would be used for authentic Native handicraft from Alaska. That's handicraft that is made by Alaskan Natives in Alaska, and it doesn't identify it as to which race, whether it's Aleut, Eskimo, or Indian, nor does it identify it as to the location in the state. It only maintains the Silver Hand program so that the consumers, so the shop owners, and those who are really interested in buying Native handicraft can be assured to the greatest extent possible that that's what's happening. In addition to that, because there is concern, and I think that those resident Alaskans who are non-Native but who do produce very fine work should be able to identify their crafts, we've added a section that would provide for a seal which would identify resident Alaskan craft, which is non-Native. For lack of anything better, this bill would set up a tag which would have the Alaska flag on it with the words "an authentic resident handicraft from Alaska," with the Alaska flag as a symbol. I think that's a very simple way to handle the program. We maintain the Silver Hand program as it has been for years, and a new tag for the resident. In addition, we simplified the way that the tags are affixed. Instead of allowing every craftsperson or in the state to become an agent to affix their own, we placed it with the person who's doing the buying, with the agent himself. For example, if you're a retailer, if you buy from a wholesaler, the wholesaler would affix the tag because he's buying directly from the individual. If I, as a retailer, buy directly from the individual, then I'm the one that fixes the tag. And I think that simplifies it substantially. I think it's a very important program. There are those consumers in the state and those consumers outside the state, I think, who deserve to know when they buy handicrafts from Alaska that it is an Alaskan craft that was made in Alaska, and they need to know whether it was made by a Native or a non-Native. And I think it's a good, perhaps a good consumer protection bill.
Is there further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Swanson.
Yeah, on page 3, about line 10, where it says the agent shall, without charge, inspect and determine whether the article is an authentic article, Native or non-Native resident handcraft made in Alaska. Now, that raised a lot of problems, because there you make the agent or the store owner responsible for affixing some sort of a seal or a silver hand or something, and I think that we'll have the same kind of a rumble from the people that handle these artifacts unless that's taken out of there. And I would, I'd like to have Mr. Duncan respond to maybe some of the problems that we had last year on this very thing.
Representative Duncan.
I don't really see that as a major problem, and I've talked to a number of shop owners.
excuse me, I've talked to a number of shop owners, I guess not all of them, and there's another one on the floor here, but I don't see that as a major problem. We're involved in this kind of work, and it really doesn't create a hardship. And I don't think that was one of the major problems in the legislation last year. I think the major problem last year was that we had so many tags, and we had to identify them by location, you had to identify them by the race, the whole bit. It was just impossible to do that. But as an owner of a shop, whoever that might be, I think when they buy directly from the individual, it's very easy for them to determine whether or not that's a handcrafted item made of Alaskan material in Alaska, or whether it's an item made on a production line down in Seattle, out of perhaps Alaskan ivory. It's very, very easy to identify that. And many shop owners do buy directly from the person who's doing the craft work. At that point, when that transaction is made, is when they would identify it and affix a seal, either the silver hand seal as an authentic Alaskan craft, or the Alaska flag seal in this case, as one done by a non-native but a resident Alaskan. If, for example, the shop owner was to buy from a wholesaler, then the penalty section, the responsibility, the whole bit is upon the wholesaler, because the wholesaler is the one who's buying directly in that case from the maker of the craft. So the responsibility, I think, is fixed pretty well in this piece of legislation. Responsibility for affixing the seal, responsibility for determining whether it's an authentic Alaskan craft, whether it's non-native or native, is fixed on the person who purchases that item from the individual who made it. Might be the wholesaler, it might be the retailer. I don't think that's overburdensome. I think it'll work.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, since I assume I'm the other shop owner referred to, as a matter of my practical experience in this section that Mr. Swanson asked about has been that you will normally know whether or not the person that did the work is Alaskan, and you will probably know whether or not the person is native. At least you're taking that person's word for it that he or she did the work. And if you do buy something that comes from outside, and I might add, Mr. Speaker, just for information of the body, that a lot of soapstone carvings that you'll see in Alaskan shops are not done in Alaska. They come from Seattle. But, of course, the retailer will know that, right? And as a practical matter, what we do is very simple. If we're in any doubt at all, we don't put on the seal. If there's any doubt, any possible doubt, we just lean over backward in that direction. And if you do that, there's no major problem.
Is there further discussion? Ready for the question. Question is, shall House Bill 756 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Representative Swanson. Clerk, please take the roll.
Yeas, 3 Nays, 2 Excused.
So House Bill 756 has passed the House. Clerk, please read the next item on the calendar.
House Concurrent Resolution 114 by the State Affairs Committee, approving staggered motor vehicle registration regulations. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Concurrent Resolution 114 under consideration. 3 members of the committee recommend it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Nakak, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Dankworth, Lathine, and Nakak. Signing no recommendation, Miles. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
House Concurrent Resolution 114 is before the House. Is there any discussion? Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I think this is a very poor solution to a real problem. At the risk of boring some of the people who've heard me before on this, I went back last year when we got out of session and found the line to get license plates was about two-thirds of a good country block long in Fairbanks. I went back over a period of 2 weeks a number of times, and the line was never less than 25 people. I think the department or the division of motor vehicles had fallen down the job. I think they have not attempted to handle the situation properly, which is to have a skeleton force most of the year and hire a lot of temporary employees and set up some satellite vehicle registration stations during the month of May. I don't think this is the right solution for several reasons. One is that there's no special reason that we couldn't cut the volume in half by letting people register their cars for 2 years. I don't see any reason not to do that at all. Or 4 years. I see no real problems. If anybody wants to put his money down the line and turn in his check, give him a 2-year registration or 3 or 4 and cut down the volume. Secondly, this would, way this is going to work, as I understand it, is that if you have to, your register, your license plate number ends in a 9, I presume you registered in September or something like that. Well, other members of the House may have better memories than I do, but I know my driver's license is supposed to be renewed in the month of my birthday. I don't know how many times I have done that. I think that I seem to share that, have one of those memories like a sieve, as many people do. I realize about February or March that it's about time to renew my driver's license. So far, I haven't been penalized for that, but that's what I'm... I think that's going to happen, Mr. Speaker, with a tremendous number of people with this sort of a very strange system of staggered registration. I think also, Mr. Speaker, that the Division of Motor Vehicles has a pretty poor track record. This is the same outfit 2 years ago. We passed a change in the cost of license plates. You remember it applied to pickups and panel trucks and as well. And this is a division that came out and interpreted that to make a pickup truck a commercial vehicle. So instead of paying $40, you had to pay $80. And they went and told everybody it was a fault of the legislature. This is the same outfit that last year, in response to those complaints about the long lines, at least was quoted in the Fairbanks paper as saying it's because the legislature didn't give them enough money. In other words, the division does very few things right and never admits doing anything wrong. And I have no great confidence in this proposed solution. I would certainly like to see us go back to the drawing board and have them offer something, some other alternatives or a better solution than this one.
House, please stand at ease. Come to order. HCR 114 is before the House in second reading. Is there further discussion? Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, is there some statutory requirement that we approve this regulation?
Yes, there is, if it's to go into effect. Someone may wish to elaborate on that. Representative Lathine.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I think this is probably about one or maybe there's two provisions in the statutes where we as a legislature have to take affirmative action on the regulations. In this particular case, we have to take affirmative action on these regulations. I'd like to point out that the idea behind this on the staggered registration, as I see it anyway, I know there's awful long lines in Anchorage and there are problems there in trying to get people, but to distribute the workload out over a 12-month period, thus creating better efficiencies within the motor vehicle registration department, hopefully. This is their plan. This is their way of trying to solve the problem, and I really think that we should go along with them and allow them the opportunity to clean up their act, as Mr. Parr says. I agree that they have had problems, and I think this has been their presentation of a way of doing it, and I think we should approve the regulations.
Representative Dankworth.
Mr. Speaker, I think probably too. I'm in favor of this. Not so much that a lot of the complaints that Charlie Parr mentioned, I have too about that. In fact, I've been talking to them for some years now, trying to get at least one post in there for the handicapped and the elderly. I've watched those lines where handicapped people and people 65, 70 years old standing in line for hours. No place to sit down, and I'd gone to them and asked them, why don't you put one window over here for the handicapped and at least the older people. But I've got no response from that either, so my purpose isn't to protect it. However, the physical plants that these people operate in, you can just hire more temporaries if you want to, but there's just so many stalls, and the room is just so big, and you could put five more people in there in that last day, and people being what they are, they wait till the last minute, and these lines are long, and people are just jammed in there, and they just can't handle that much paperwork. So to that point, I think that this bill does do a little bit of what I think most of us have been trying to get them to do, and that's at least come up with a scheme that will spread this thing out. There is a point in here, let's say you have three or four vehicles, and they all have a different last number. You're going to have to go down there three or four times to get your vehicle registered. These are problems that are somewhat created here. Now, Mr. Roberts said in testimony for the State Affairs that there's nothing in here to prevent a man taking all of his vehicles and registering them at one time if he wants to and go ahead and get it out of the way, even though the due dates. So I didn't quite understand just how that would work, but at any rate, he says you can do that, and that would take care of that problem. So maybe at least it's a move in the right direction from what we have now with long lines. And I just temporary employees at one time isn't going to solve the line problem, I don't think.
Representative Phillips?
I really don't know that much about this, but I have one question on my mind. How would this be enforced? You know, I know June 1st, the troopers and the municipal police around the state can at least know who's already paid their $30 for the plates or not. And if you have it staggered, I think it's going to make the law enforcement job a little bit more difficult. I don't know. I just want to have an answer to that question.
Representative Dankworth?
Well, I'll just tell him how little I can remember about it, but there had to be something, as Mr. Roberts testified, as I understand it, when you buy this, you get two stickers. One of them has got a color on it that goes on your plate that when you look at that, you can tell if the car has been registered. Now, I just don't remember the details of it, but they did cover that in making it easy to determine whether that vehicle is properly registered.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think I'm going to vote against this today, but reconsider it in any case, no matter which way the vote goes, because apparently this is not just a little resolution we can wish by on a motherhood issue, because there are some problems with it. But I don't think that the problem is that people are waiting until the last minute and showing up there. I've had constituents complain to me that they need to change registration because they're selling or buying a vehicle, and they have to go and wait at the end of a line when they're in the middle of their own work day. They go there for an hour on one day, give up because they've got to go back and tend to their business or their job, go there the next day, wait for another hour, hour and a half. Sometimes it takes 1, 2, or 3 weeks because of what's going on. So I don't think there's people who are just waiting until the last minute to renew their registration. But what concerns me is that I really have not looked at the regulations, and I don't serve on the committee that dealt with this. And I looked at the resolution before Mr. Parr spoke, and it looked fine to me, I guess. But after hearing him, I'd like to have the weekend to look at it. So I'll vote against it, but in any case, I'm going to serve notice of reconsideration.
Representative Parr?
Mr. Speaker, I guess one of the things that really concerns me and essentially, and it was touched on by Representative Dankworth a little bit there, is that on any of these programs or things that happen like this one, we have two choices. We can arrange things to make it nice and easy for the state agency. And I think if you'll look, those who've had a chance to look at this thing turned in by the Department of Division of Motor Vehicles will find that the major benefits all apply to the Department, to the Division of Motor Vehicles. The other approach we can always take is to make it easy for the people who are supposedly being served. And my gut reaction, Mr. Speaker, is that whatever system we adopt, whenever possible, should be adjusted to the people and not that we adjust the people to the system. And I think that this really boils down to adjusting the people to the system.
Representative Urien?
Mr. Speaker, it seems to me that the system we have today has been made very easy for the people. I mean, they can register their vehicle without ever leaving the comfort of their home. But since people have chosen not to do that, we are now trying to give another system that will maybe make it a little easier for the people, and I hope we approve them.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The only question I have is on page 20, one of the major concerns is increased DMV operating expenses. I don't know what their operating expenses are now or what it's going to be after this. Does anybody have a breakdown of what the increase in permanent personnel costs are?
Representative Lafine.
Mr. Speaker, as I remember hearing in committee, they stated that there would be negligible increases and it wasn't necessary to have any kind of a physical impact thing. They felt that they could handle it within their own, what they already have.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, one of the things that the division has done, very definitely for the benefit of the people, was having their mail out operation. I'm presuming that if we pass this this resolution today, they will continue that program because when you renew a license, you don't have to stand even under the current situation. You don't have to stand in any lines at all because they've created a very efficient and very pleasant way to get your license. That's just you put your check in the mail and mail it, and they send you back your tags. And I, for instance, I did it this year, and I appreciated the ease with which it could be done. So I'm assuming that even though we pass this this resolution, that program will continue. It's just that they'll stagger their mail-out notifications to match the staggered due date.
Representative Lafine.
Mr. Speaker, that is Representative Miller. That is correct. They will continue the mail-outs. Right now, this year, they mailed out 296,000 mail-outs. And as of yesterday, I believe they had 36,000 returns. That's kind of an indication if they continue, you know, people in terms of replies, we're going to have an awful lot of people standing in line when the May date comes around.
Is there further discussion? Ready for the question. Question is, shall House Concurrent Resolution 114 pass the House? Take a roll call vote. The members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Yeas, 12 nays, 2 excused.
So House Concurrent Resolution 114 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
I serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on HCR 114.
Clerk, please note Representative Brown's notice of reconsideration of his vote on House Concurrent Resolution 114. Brings us to the end of today's calendar and down to unfinished business. Representative Rudd.
May we revert to introduction of guests, Mr. Speaker?
No objection. Revert to introduction of guests. Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, I claim to be the proudest parent in this body. Others may dispute that claim, but I'm staking the claim right now. Yesterday, when my husband and older daughter were here, they refused to allow me to introduce them. Today, my younger daughter is here, and she hasn't had time to forbid me to introduce her, so I'd like you to meet her. Her name is Sandra Rudd, and I'm very proud of her.
Are there further introductions? If not, we'll continue with the regular order of business. We're under unfinished business. Is there unfinished business to come before the House? Are there any special orders? Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, I wanted to beat Mr. Meekins because I know the subject that Mr. Meekins is going to speak on, and I wanted to speak on a little more pleasant subject before he gets going. Mr. Speaker, today the House State Affairs Committee introduced House Bill 908, and frankly, I didn't ask any of the members whether they were but they were supportive of that issue. Again, I've been chastised by the minority, but I guess I just keep doing the same thing. Ms. Speaker, this bill that was referred to the Select Committee on Telecommunications and State Affairs and Finance deals exactly specifically with your referral, and that is with items dealing with telecommunications. It's an appropriation bill, Mr. Speaker, of approximately $10 million. It deals with the capital cost of facilities to provide television service to the remaining 176 communities that have not yet been electrified, so to speak, at least from a communication standpoint. And then it takes care of the operation and maintenance, and then it maintains with about another million point two with the type of TV demonstration project that has gone on. It doesn't expand that radically, but simply maintains it. Mr. Speaker, this is a good appropriation, and frankly, I think the state would be prudent and wise in politicians would be well advised to take that giant step, because possibly circumstances will preclude us in the next couple of years just because of the arbitrary nature of partisan politics. But I think that our actions in 1975 and then in 76 with the appropriation for in 75, of course, we appropriated $5 million to get into the smaller stations in rural Alaska, and in 76 we appropriated money for the TV demonstration project. Mr. Speaker, at that time, you remember it was a very hotly contested ideological battle, and one side was alleging that we were getting into the telecommunications business, and the other side was just saying, well, we don't think so, but so what, it's a good idea, notwithstanding the oversimplified arguments of a free enterprise. The state has the obligation, I feel at least, constitutionally, if not morally, to provide reasonable telecommunications throughout the state. Mr. Speaker, we did that. We took some heat for it. A number of us were extremely proud, and frankly, it was the liberals from the cities and the folks from Bush, Alaska, that provided the body count necessary to come up with a majority in both houses. I think everybody should be cognizant of that. Mr. Speaker, the reason I wanted to rise today is to congratulate, I think, a number of my colleagues who are in the other party that I don't think are so polarized and so partisanly oriented nowadays because of the trail-breaking appropriation and policy determination that was made by this legislature a couple of years ago, and I don't anticipate there being so much of a party split, or rather a partisan split on this issue coming down the track. But I did wanted to mention that there was not monies put in for telecommunications, or rather for teleconferencing, though that will probably be an item that we'll want to amend into the bill. And there's a difference in the dish size from 4 meters to 10 meters that we'll probably want to look at very seriously in expanding, just from a practical standpoint, the dishes from 4 to 10 meters, at least in a number of areas. And I wanted to conclude with the observation that possibly my hometown paper may see this as they do. Often in sort of a myopic way, in an excessively paranoid way, and somehow tie this into the Capitol move. And if they do, why, freedom of speech and freedom of the press, since they own the press and they're Americans too, why, it's a free country and they can say whatever they want to. But they are simply paranoid and overly myopic. And it's not the intention of hardly anybody in this legislature to see this as a stalking horse from precluding the capital move one way or the other, but it is, I think, everybody's uniform intention that's at least going to ultimately support this this appropriation to further telecommunicize or or whatever the tense is. Anyway, provide the people with being able to see and hear out in rural Alaska and various smaller communities in the state, just like the hot shots get to do in Anchorage, Alaska. And so I would admonish my hometown paper to, if possible, to hold their tongue on the issue of the move to the capital when it comes to this issue. And if they can't, why I'll forgive them.
Representative Eliason.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to privilege the floor. The hour's early and the calendar's been light. If I could, I'd like to share with you some correspondence I've received from some of my constituents who are eighth graders in Blatchley Junior High School in Sitka.
You have the floor, Representative Eliason.
Mr. Speaker, the first letter says, Honorable Sir, I might say, Mr. Speaker, that these future voters of ours are thinking about the same problems that we've been addressing for the last 75 days. It says, Honorable Sir, I'm writing about the prices of lots in Sitka and throughout Alaska. Lots are usually priced between $12,000 and $25,000. I think that these prices are a bit outrageous and could be lowered. By the time the homeowners buy a lot, all they have enough money for afterwards is enough to build a card paper shack. I seriously hope the Alaska state government does something about this. What do you think of the prices of lots? Please state your position when you reply. Thank you for taking the time to read my letter. Sincerely, Debbie Norris. Mr. Speaker, I have one here I think that Representative Byrne would be very interested in. It says, Honorable Sir, in my opinion, the Homestead Act is a very bad idea. I have several reasons for disagreeing with that act listed below. Many, many people would move up from the lower 48 and homestead just for the real estate and then sell it, or they wouldn't live on it at all. Alaska has a limited amount of land you can live off of. It is especially limited in southeastern Alaska, with all the mountains coming right down to the sea. And the rest of most of Alaska that could be homestead is too isolated. Large quarrels would arise over who should be eligible for land. I hope you will be as strongly opposed to this bill as I am. Sincerely, Zimmy Moore. Mr. Speaker, I'm sure that Representative Kelly will be interested in this one. Honorable Sir, I'm writing about the state capital move. I don't think it should be moved to the Anchorage area. It will cost money that could be used in improving and building hospitals and boat harbors in Sitka that they really need. It would also cost many Juneau residents their jobs and bring down their tourist income. Besides, what difference is it going to make anyway? I would appreciate a prompt reply. Thank you. Jennifer Hebar. Mr. Speaker, I have a letter here I think that Representative Haugen might be interested in. Honorable Sir, I'm writing about House Bill number 71. I am strongly in favor of this bill for the following reasons. It will save some crab that otherwise would have been wasted. B, it will save a lot of fish that get caught in crab pots and die. I'm against a part of it for the following reason. It could get expensive buying the material, changing it, and replacing the panels or seams. I hope you will please vote for this bill. Thank you for taking the time to read this letter. Robert Allen. Mr. Speaker, this last letter I think should be left at local government level. It says, Honorable Sir, I'm writing about the school lunch hour. I think it's just too short. I think it should be at least a half hour longer for the kids at the end of the long, very long line. What are they supposed to do when they finally reach the food line? Are they supposed to stuff the food down their throats to be on time for the bell? Oh, I don't think so. I think a lot of the other kids and adults will agree with me. Sincerely, Randy Verney. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, it's pretty hard to follow those two shows. I request the privilege of the floor to make just a few remarks about Mr. Bradley's subject.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, our long-lost former rules chairman, when he lost his election by a rather narrow margin, left me charged with translating whenever necessary what the member from Eagle River says, since very often it's hard to figure that out. Mr. Speaker, I think he misspoke in a couple of places. There aren't that many communities in Alaska that have very many people at all. And the appropriation, I think, is addressed to the total of 176 communities, including the five urban areas or somewhat urban areas that are receiving it in the on-the-air sense, and the 23 communities that receive the service otherwise. But, Mr. Speaker, I don't want to be accused of being a liberal from the city, particularly because of my vote on some of this related legislation in the past. I don't think there's much of an ideological identification with this. As a rather conservative businessman who is something of a pillar of the broadcasting community said in testifying about the TV demonstration project, don't mess with success. He also said that if anybody had told him that it would have worked as well as it has when we were first proposing it, he never would have believed it. And that was Mr. Augie Hebert, who's chairman of the board of Northern Television. And I think that we've seen that we've provided services, as the report shows and our own common sense would show, to an estimated 306,000 Alaskans. And if you look at that and look at the amount of money involved, that's a pretty small expenditure of money. One of the few things that people can point to and see that this is where their tax dollars, or the oil company's tax dollars, or really both, are going for. And it's a service that I think is greatly appreciated, whether it's the CBS Morning News with an Anchorage viewer, or the Monday Night Football and a Fairbanks viewer, or an entertainment program going into the village, or an educational program during the day. And I'd like to think that it's not any kind of an ideological or polarizing effect, and I would hope that the overzealous chairman of the State Affairs Committee didn't give a polarizing speech.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution number 41 be withdrawn from committee and placed on the clerk's desk for the next daily calendar.
There's objection, Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I think it's rather appropriate on the eve of the day that some of our members are going to venture forward into the lower 48 voicing opinions on the D2 issue, that this body, which so far has failed to take a position on the D2 issue, should at least show our willingness to do so by placing this particular piece of legislation on the clerk's desk. This resolution passed the other body a number of weeks ago by a sizable majority, and I know the majority of the people that sit in this House of Representatives favor this resolution. And for us to allow a very few people keep us from voicing their opinions on this issue, I think is wrong. Mr. Speaker, this particular resolution has some be it resolved clauses that are exactly parallel to the resolved clauses that have been adopted by the D2 Steering Council, which is chaired by Mr. Cooper. There is nothing offensive to anyone other than possibly to those who are in favor of H.R. 39 as it was written. The only people who would oppose this resolution are those who favor it as written. Mr. Speaker, I think we can no longer sit back and fail to state a position on an issue that is vitally important to the state of Alaska. And I'd ask the members to vote to pull it from committee.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to call for party caucuses.
House, please stand at ease. The question before the House is, shall Senate Joint Resolution 41 be withdrawn from committee? And so further discussion on the question. Ready for the question. We'll take a roll call vote. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Thirteen yeas, 22 nays, 5 excused.
The motion to remove the resolution from committee has not been adopted. We're still under special orders. Are there further special orders? Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, I was getting to think that people were trying to keep me from speaking, but I'd like the privilege of the floor to speak on the capital move.
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative Meekins.
Speaker, as everybody here knows, the capital move is a pretty emotional issue, and I think a lot of us have tried to remain calm about it, and I've tried to do that, but I'm very upset right now about some things that have happened yesterday, and that is that the chairman of the Capitol Site Planning Commission, Charles Belke, was quoted in the Anchorage paper as claiming that I'm aiding the anti-move forces by asking questions about the total costs. Mr. Speaker, I'm a member of the Finance Committee, as you know, and I think it's totally appropriate for someone in my capacity to ask questions about the total cost of the capital move. And it's a pretty sad state of affairs when you question what the commission is doing and what the total costs are, and the next day you're attacked in the paper and accused of being an anti-move, a proponent of the anti-move forces, when really the intent of my questions was to point out that right now the anti-move forces are winning, and they're winning because the Capitol Site Planning Commission has played right into their hands because of two situations. One, because we required last year in a law that I voted against that they plan for a 30,000 person city, and secondly, because the commission has accepted an exponential growth rate in the number of employees at 6% per year. They've accepted the suggestion that the number of state employees should increase every year at 6%, which would make the total number of employees to be moved 8,600 instead of the 3,200 that is the real number. And for those reasons, the cost of the capital move have increased tremendously. In fact, they are double what they should be. When we first started talking about the capital move cost, the Boeing Commission study came out with $110 million. That was disputed. Some people said it would be more. Some people talked about $500 million. Some people said, oh, it'll probably go to $1 billion. But you know where the question is now? The question is whether or not it's $4.4 billion or $3.5 billion, depending upon which interest rate you use. The capital move for anti-capital move forces have changed the argument to how much the cost is going to be. And people are debating whether or not it's really only $966 million, or whether it's $1.4 billion, or whether it's $2.5 billion, what the costs of the state are going to be. But it's in the billions. And the polls show us that if it's over $1 billion, which all of these discussions are, that it's not going to move. And that's why I was asking those questions, because they have over $1 billion in costs that are not real. They have double the number of state employees arbitrarily. It would require increasing the budget 26% per year compounded in order to increase the number of state employees 6% every year. That can't happen, Mr. Speaker. This year our budget increases 10%. The worst we've ever averaged for any period of time is 15%. And we're not about to increase the number of state employees 6% compounded, and they should know that. And I think it's incompetent of Mr. Belke to accuse me of being opposed to the capital move when I'm getting at the heart of the question, and that if we go along with the commission's actions, the capital will not move. Unless people like myself ask questions about those costs and get those costs down to something reasonable, that capital will not move. And that's why I was asking those questions. And I resent very much his comments and accusations that I'm against the capital move, when what I was trying to do is point out that the costs that the commission have are not correct, and that we shouldn't be using those figures, and that we have to change those figures and make them lower, or the capital won't move. Thank you.
Representative Dankworth.
Mr. Speaker, may I have the privilege of the floor to speak also on the capital move?
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative Dankworth.
Mr. Speaker, I spoke yesterday to the group or to the chamber on following the will of the people in regards to the permanent fund. like to say just a few words here today in regards to that same thing, particularly in light of the fact that our Finance Committee is apparently not going to give any funds to the study of a split move or what it would cost if we didn't move the capital at all. I think that the average public is entitled to know, particularly in light of the initiative that was passed, that the people said, we would like to know what it would cost to move that capital, moving the least amount of people out of Juneau as possible. What they're being forced to look at now, as a result of our not studying the split move, is what it would cost to move the city of Juneau practically. That's not what they ask us to do. I think we really are twisting the will of the people around when we don't give them that figure. Everyone wanted to argue, let's give the people a figure so they'll know what it costs to do this job. The job they told us to do was move as few people as possible from Juneau. That is not reflected, and it is not the responsibility of that commission in the sense that they were directed by this legislature, as Mr. Meekins pointed out, by a vote of a bill which I voted against, which dictated that they had to study a city of 30,000 people, which was ridiculous on the face of it. And I'm sure that the average public became very discouraged with that when they saw how we had thwarted their will there. But at any rate, now the least we could have done was point out to them a split move and show them what it would cost to move only those necessary people and not destroy Juneau. I don't think there's a person between Ketchikan and Point Barrow that would have voted for the capital move if they meant to close down Juneau or move Juneau. The average guy on the street was talking about we'd like for the legislature to meet a little closer to us, where we could kind of go out and get some input. They weren't talking about moving a city in its entirety. Now, we've thwarted this thing around down here in the legislature to where the guy on the street, I think, is going to rebel. For those who oppose the move, I think that they may be surprised at the results of trying to manipulate the public this way. It wouldn't hurt for them they met their commitment to study the 30,000. But what's wrong with studying a split move like the initiative said and make it at least give them a choice to know what it would be realistically if we only took those that were necessary? And well, that's enough. Thank you.
Are there any more special orders? Announcement, Representative Lovestaff.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to have the privilege of the floor to speak on legislative days.
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative Lovestaff.
Just a short comment. This is the 75th legislative days. I would just like to say there's 51 more legislative days till my fishing season starts. Thank you.
Are there any more special orders? Announcements, committee meetings. Representative Gardner.
Judiciary Committee will meet at 3:00 today on House Bill 727, which is Magistrates Retirement Bill.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, in the continuing saga of Move the Capitol, House State Affairs will be meeting jointly with Senate State Affairs at 1:30 this afternoon in the Governor's Conference Room to review the legislation with the primary partner in Walforth and Flint, Mr. Eric Walforth.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, that movable meeting is still on for the same night, finally, and it is Monday night of the House Select Committee on Telecommunications, 7 p.m., but I had not previously announced the bills, and of course we're going to be recommending our final action with regard to television proposals, and the introduction of the bill was very timely today. I had thought we'd be seeking the introduction of such a bill anyway. So that our consideration will be proposed committee substitutes for House Bill 545, Satellite Users Association, and House Bill 908, the appropriation bill that was introduced today.
Representative Rudd.
Community and Regional Affairs will meet on Monday at 9 a.m. on House Bills 781 and 782, the cultural facilities bills.
Representative Miles.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, Hess will meet this afternoon on House Bills 410, 415, 493, 891 and sponsor substitute for House Bill 666, University of Alaska Reorganization. Mr. Speaker, these same bills are up next week on Wednesday and Friday, and it is my intention to ask the committee either to not act on any of the bills or to pass out one of the bills next week.
Representative Urien?
There'll be a good guys meeting in the House Minority Room behind the journey.
I can't make it.
Representative Osterbeck?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I see on the calendar here we had House HCR 95 up for today, but we didn't get the results from the meeting on the Guidelines and Control Board from Anchorage yet, so we're going to schedule that later on. But we are meeting today in House Resource Committee at 1:30 p.m. the Capitol Building. Taking up committee substitute for House Bill 811, advisory votes on D2 land, House Bill 898, Alaska Fishing Development Corporation.
Representative Freeman? House, please, stand at ease. Representative McKinnon?
Commerce will meet Monday morning at 8. We'll be taking up House Bill 615, Property Insurance, House Bill 685, Department of Transportation's Authority over Taxi Cabs, and House Bill 822, an appropriation for a geothermal energy study.
Further announcements? Further business to come before the House? Representative Miller?
Speaker, I had a request, and I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Greening be excused from the call on March 22nd, or 27th, I beg your pardon.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. The member will be excused on the date indicated.
Mr. Speaker, from Representative Smith, a similar request, I'll ask unanimous consent that she be excused from the call Monday the 27th, Tuesday the 28th, and Friday the 31st.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. The member will be excused on the dates indicated.
If there's no further business to come before the body, Mr. Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent this body stand adjournment until 10 a.m. Monday morning.
Hearing no objection, House is adjourned.